This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. It's Thursday today, and I don't think I'm coming in tomorrow unless there's a problem. Hopefully there won't be a problem. And the weather's been interesting around here because it's been what seems like, I haven't actually checked, what seems like unseasonably cold. We just were going along just as happy as a clam, and then boom, all of a sudden, it was a little chilly for several days. And now it's back warm again. So just about the time I thought I needed a coat, then I don't really need a coat. So, but that's okay, because it won't be too long here before we will be thinking that that little cold spell was actually a heat wave, because winter is coming. It's been a good week. Everything's been puttering along. Had some kind of unexpected work crop up as part of the design for this new project I'm working on, but that's okay. You know, we got that stuff under control, and at this point, there are a lot of balls in the air on these projects, because I've got one project in a development phase that a bunch of guys are working on, and then I've got working on a design phase for another set of project, and it's got several pieces underneath it, and I'm working on the design document for that, so things are pretty exciting, but you know what? Everything's fine. It'll all get done. We just keep moving forward one step at a time, trying to put all the pieces into place, and make sure that everybody understands where we're going and what's happening, and it looks like there is a big line up here for some reason. So I'm going to assume that there is an accident, and I'm going to duck down a side street. Anyway, so that's good. Had some lovely dinners and breakfasts and things with friends this week. It's good, good. I love getting together with my friends and chatting, just sharing about life, the universe, and everything. Had a very nice breakfast this morning with a friend, and found plenty of things to talk about. And so life is good. It's just very, very good. Been working along on Windfall Broadcast, Book 2, the 24-book series. And that's coming along. I think it's going to be just fine. I think it has a nice mix of intensity and humor and, you know, all those things that kind of keep a book moving forward. I think I have an ending that I can pull and hit an emotionally resonant tone on, which is always important. Now it's just a matter of writing the thing out. I think I know where I'm going and what's going to happen, but it's fun because even though I kind of know where I'm going and the things that are going to happen, when I actually get into them, I think, oh, I could add that. I just had a little thing just a couple of days ago that I actually was writing along, and then I just made myself laugh because I was thinking I could do a corruption of the Oppenheimer, the quote that is attributed to Oppenheimer after the detonation of the first atomic bomb here on Earth, when he saw it, he didn't actually say it, but he recounted later that when he saw that, it reminded him of the saying. He said, I'm sure others were reminded of it, of the saying from the writings of Hindu, I am become death, the destroyer of worlds. And I've got a character that quotes that in this book, except this particular character's been dropped on his head. Dropped on its head. And so it doesn't quite come out right, but you know, there are things that just add a little humor, and they make me laugh. I don't know if they'll make anyone else laugh, but they make me laugh. So, there you go. So that's going well, and found out today, actually, I was thinking, oh, I could do that, and that would add a little humor to it, too. So, and yeah, it's just fun. I love writing. Of course, now, you know, the flesh is giving me the whole business about, well, you know, something may happen to you physically, and you know, you may get some kind of a disease or something, then you're just not going to be able to finish this thing. And it's like, will you shut up? So, yeah. Welcome to the flesh. But, you know, I know what that is, so that's okay. We'll just go forward a step at a time, and we'll be all right. I don't have a hugely long topic today, which is fine, because some of these podcasts have been going over much longer than they needed to. But when I read this, I went, oh, there you go. I think I've been saying that. Of course, I'm the only one who would interpret it this way, but that's okay. It just proves what I've been saying. And just as a little background for those two or three listeners of you who may be new, I need to back up a little bit and then we'll get into the topic. I have for years said that I believe that science comes in three waves. That the first wave of science is really basic, easy, observational. Cavemen sitting around, watching animals, take some clay, models it, makes a somewhat respectable representation of the animal, thinks, see, not so hard. Whoever created all this, not so smart. I make animals too. Just can't make them move, but I make them move someday. I'm smart. So, the idea in the first wave is that in the first wave of science, there is an acceptance that there is a designer, and that the designer is out there, and the designer isn't really that removed from us. Just a little smarter, you know, but sure, there's a designer, but he's not really that awesome, or she's not really that awesome. It's basically principles we can understand. You know, the earth is supported by a turtle, all that kind of stuff, or four turtles, whatever it is, they're walking along somewhere. I forget what the actual thing is. That's the first wave of science. The next wave of science is when humanity starts actually digging down a little deeper and starts realizing when they're cutting open things and all this mush in there actually does something, and are all these processes that are going on, and they get a little deeper and a little deeper and a little deeper, and they realize this is like machinery in here, and it's very complex, and somehow it keeps everything together, and it's just really quite impressive, thank you very much. And at that point, then the creator seems to be far away, and in fact, maybe the designer doesn't exist at all, and there's just things that are happening by themselves. Because it becomes easier to believe in things that are happening all by themselves than it is to believe in a being that could actually design all that stuff, because that makes us feel small. And so it's much, yeah, all that noise, that's like my air conditioner thing. Maybe I'll just do this and shut that off and just get a little more air blowing. So because this is live without any edits and I'm driving home. So in the first wave, you basically have a belief in God, but you believe in a God who is near. In the second wave, you either don't have a belief in God or you believe in a God who is unlike, that there is, you know, deism. Yes, God created the world, but he really doesn't care about us. He's nowhere around. He's not paying attention to us. We don't have to feel beholden to him in any way. He just kicked it all off and left. In the third wave of science, in my little world, what happens is that we find out more and more and more how intricate things are, how balanced they are, how beautiful they are from a design perspective, how amazing they are, that all the way down at the nanoscale, that there's all these intricate little machines that are functioning every day to keep everything going, making ATP, making, you know, just incredible, incredible machinery. And it all works in concert with each other. If you've ever watched any of the videos of the inner workings of a cell or how a virus attacks a cell, man, it's just unbelievable. It's unbelievable how cool it is. And at some point, as you just keep making these discoveries about how amazing all this thing is, I think you approach the third wave of science, which is a throwing up of your hands in the air and saying, okay, all right, fine, there's got to be a designer, or life must have come from off of the planet. It must have been seeded here by something else, because this stuff couldn't have just happened. I don't think we're quite to the third wave yet, but there's a whole lot of whispers of the third wave, I think, going on in a lot of hearts and minds of scientists who are involved in biological discoveries and other chemical discoveries of the world. And I think it's becoming more and more difficult to just dismiss it all as having occurred by chance. With that background, I have said for many, many, many months now that as people are talking about evolution and how this evolved and that evolved, you know, well, that was because it evolved, that I have replaced the word evolution and evolved with design for adaptation. Well, this happened because of evolution. Well, this happened because it was designed for adaptation. And the interesting thing about that is that there's really no way to prove one way or another whether it was complete random chance that caused changes, or in fact it was designed for adaptation. At least I used to think there was no way to prove it one way or another, until I came across this article. And when I came across this article, I went, oh, now that's a little bit interesting. The name of the article was "Evolution is Not Random, at least not totally." The author of the article is named Tanya Lewis, and I believe I found the article on through Google News. Sorry. End of the week. I'm a little bit tired. And it was on a website, I think, called livescience.com. So it is a science website. Very interesting. So anyways, she starts off the article by talking about how evolution is said to be often said to be blind because there's no outside force guiding natural selection. But she says changes in genetic material that occur at the molecular level are not entirely random, a new study suggests. She said these mutations are guided by both the physical properties of the genetic code and the need to preserve critical functions of proteins. Because this is the problem. You know, if you're going to say that it's fully random, and I'm going off on a tangent now, if you're going to say that DNA is fully random, you have no way of knowing whether that mutation is going to hammer into the middle of a strip that defines protein molecules. And if you get too far off, the protein molecule won't fold correctly, it won't work correctly, and whatever that molecule is supposed to do, that capability in the cell disappears. So that's bad. So if everything was just completely random, you would expect to have, at least I would, far more detrimental mutations than you would ever have beneficial mutations. That was a little sidebar. She goes on to say, conventional wisdom states that evolution occurs by random mutations that make an individual organism better able to survive and reproduce according to natural selection. However, we've got a couple of biologists that were biologists in fisheries up in Alaska Fairbanks in Juneau, and they set out to see whether or not these mutations were truly random. So in a previous study they had done, he and his colleagues had analyzed DNA from a number of species that encode a complex of proteins whose job is to produce ATP. And that's the energy cell, that's the energy-rich molecule that powers our cells. Okay, ATP is extremely, extremely important. So he says changes in these bits of DNA allow a species to adapt to its environment, so they are said to be under positive selection. So the way I interpret that, in other words, there are certain portions of the DNA that allow a species to adapt to its environment when there are changes. And so it's those sections that really have to have this ability to mutate, but not mutate wildly, just mutate a little bit here and there so that you can adapt. Well, one day, Garvin, the scientist, he was entering a DNA sequence for salmon into his computer, and he kept typing the sequence wrong because portions of it had long stretches of repeats, like C-A, 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 C-A. And he would get that pairings of C-A, he would get them off by one. You know, he would have four instead of five, or six instead of seven. And he had an idea. Oh, just an idea out of the blue came to him. I wonder who was whispering to him. He was wondering if cells have that same problem. That when they're working across CA, 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 sometimes it's easy to get off by one pairing. And so he decided to kind of start looking around like this. To hear him explain it, he said, it's kind of like buttoning up your shirt in the morning when you're tired and you miss one button. That everything is off by one. And there's this loop in your shirt that you now need to fix. And he said the loop is analogous to the DNA that needs to be repaired, he said. And he said when cells are fixing these buttons, the DNA has more time to mutate, a phenomenon called slip-strand mispairing. So these repeats, a physical property of DNA, influence the mutation rate. But even as a section of DNA is mutating, the sequence on either side of it, which contains the repeated section, cannot change too much or the protein won't work properly. The sequence would normally mutate until the repeat disappeared, but the need to preserve the sequence so that the protein still works prevents the repeats from being eliminated. I didn't get all of that, but the result is a hot mutational spots in between stable DNA sequences. So the fact that there are these repeats in there seems to be able to not only cause additional mutations, but also protect and keep proteins from mutating so much so. Just a second, there might be one other place I need to check for my mail. Yeah, we're good. So while these repeated sections may cause more mutations, they also have a role in ensuring that the necessary proteins will remain the same. That's very interesting, because now what you get is you get mutations along with stability. It's fancy, man. It's fancy. So they decided, that's kind of an interesting thing. So why don't we look around then? And let's take a look at all of the DNA sequences that are under positive selection. We know that these DNA sequences are sequences which allow an animal to adapt to its environment when conditions change. More food, less food, etc., etc. Backing into my garage, one moment. So they looked at these positive selection sequences, and then they looked around them to see if, in fact, there were strings of repeating characters, the CACACACA type thing. They looked to see that if they were anywhere near, to see whether or not they were anywhere near a repeated sequence. They found that 97% of the sites were. To find out if other DNA sequences that don't undergo positive selection also mutated this way, Gavin identified all of the repeated sequences in the DNA of the species studied. He found that 60% of all mutating sites were next to a repeat. This is a quote from Gavin. So, in the end, most mutation is not random, at least for the DNA sequences we analyzed here. Rather, it is a combination of two opposing forces, the mispairing during DNA replication and the need to preserve a protein's function. The author concludes, these findings could explain why evolution occurs so much faster than if mutations were in fact totally random, the researcher said. The repeated sequences may also be necessary for evolution, they said. For example, genetic diversity, while the repeated sequences may also be necessary for evolution, they said. For example, genetic diversity at these DNA sites could help species adapt to changes in the availability of food and other resources that can result from climate change, Gavin said. So these repeated sequences could be used as a predictor for how a population will respond to environmental changes. Now, I just found that fascinating. I just found this fascinating that baked right into our DNA is a mechanism that encourages mutations, but encourages mutations in a positive manner because it restricts harmful mutations against proteins. That's pretty interesting because that's sort of really beneficial thing. You know, you wouldn't just expect that to crop up by chance, would ya? But apparently some people still do. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.